Lora Winterpause. Vom 23. Dezember bis zum 2. Januar ist das Radio Lora in der Winterpause. Und wir erwärmen die kalten Stunden mit Juwelen aus unserem Archiv.
Vacaciones de invierno de Lora. Radio Lora se va de vacaciones. Del 23 de diciembre hasta el 2 de enero, Lora hará una pausa invernal. Pero te calentamos las horas frías con joyas de nuestro archivo.
Lora Winter Break. From the 23rd of December to the 2nd of January, Radio Lora is on winter break. And we warm up the cold hours with tools from our archive.
Willkommen zu der heutigen Veranstaltung, der zweiten Veranstaltung des diesjährigen ENAF. Mein Name ist Zahai und das ist Mitu und wir sind Teil des ENAF-Kollektivs und werden eine kurze Einführung machen, um einfach so ein bisschen den Rahmen zu setzen. Genau, ich werde das zuerst auf Deutsch machen und dann anschließend noch auf Englisch. Die heutige Veranstaltung lautet Antiqueere Gesetze in Uganda, Ghana und Nigeria, Widerstand und Resilienz. Das ist mit AWO. Hier ganz auf der rechten Seite für euch, mit Adebayo und mit Kweku in der Moderation. Und Purity könnt ihr hinter euch sehen, aus Stockholm heute zugeschaltet. Genau, kurz was zum diesjährigen Programm des ENAFs. Das Thema ist Resisting Ongoing Colonialism. Und wir versuchen, koloniale Kontinuitäten einerseits und dekolonialen Widerstand aufzuzeichnen. Und morgen findet hier auch wieder eine Grief Ceremony statt in Zusammenarbeit mit Memories of Many. Die ist am Nachmittag um 4 Uhr und am Abend findet ein Panel statt zu der Situation im Sudan, der militärische Krieg gegen die Revolution. Und am Samstag sind wir in der Roten Fabrik den ganzen Tag. Da findet ihr auch verschiedene Panels und Workshops. Es gibt draußen das Programm und ihr könnt es auch online nachlesen. Dann haben wir Danksagungen. Wir danken natürlich zuallererst der Moderation, Kweku, und den Panelists, die heute hier sind. Wir möchten uns aber auch beim Gemeindehaus Ausasyl bedanken für den Raum, den wir heute nutzen können, und bei unserer Technik sowie auch der Übersetzung, die da hinten links sitzt. Vielen Dank. Wir haben Übersetzungen heute. Das Panel findet in Englisch statt. Das heißt, wenn ihr gerne eine Übersetzung hättet in Deutsch, dann haltet bitte jetzt eure Hände hoch, sodass unsere Übersetzung sehen kann, wer alles Übersetzungsgeräte braucht. Das dauert immer einen Moment. Das heißt, immer mal wieder nach oben halten, wenn das nötig ist. Genau, ich sehe da einige Hände schon. Und Pascal wird jetzt gleich rumgehen und diese Geräte verteilen. Dann haben wir ein Awareness-Konzept, das seht ihr aufgehängt überall. Falls ihr da Ergänzungen oder Fragen habt, dann kommt gerne auf uns zu. Heute sind die Menschen mit dem pinkigen ENAF-Sticker verantwortlich. Wenn irgendwas ist, geht unbedingt auf die zu. Und auch wir sind heute Ansprechpersonen. Grundsätzlich gilt aber, dass wir alle Verantwortung tragen für diesen Raum, sodass wir uns alle möglichst sicher fühlen. Und zu guter Letzt, wir sind angewiesen auf Spenden, daher findet ihr überall Spendencodes bzw. QR-Codes und auch draußen eine kleine Kasse, sodass wir diese Events weiterhin gestalten können. Genau. Vielen Dank, dass ihr alle hier seid.
So, I'm gonna repeat everything on English. I'm Mitu and that's Zahai and we're both part of the ENAF Collective. Welcome to today's event. Today's event is going to be about anti-queer laws in Nigeria, Uganda, and Ghana, resilience and resistance. This year's focus in general is on colonial continuities and how we can resist against them. Here on the panel, we have to my right, AWO, Adebayo, and Kweku. Online, there is Purity from Stockholm, and yeah. I will say something about the program from the next days. Tomorrow there is going to be a grief ceremony in the afternoon. It's BIPOC only. If you want to join, there is still space, but you have to inscribe online. In the evening, there is going to be a panel to Sudan and the revolution there. Both of these events are going to be here. The program on Saturday is going to be at Rote Fabrik, not at Parki. there's going to be the whole day, panels, workshops, info stands, and a music program in the evening. More information you find at the flyer, at the entrance, or online. We want to say thank you, especially to our moderation and our guests here, and to especially also to that we can be here at Gemeindehaus Ausserziel, and also thank you for the technic team and the translation team. We want to say a few things about awareness. There is an awareness concept that you see at the entrance. There are awareness people with like these stickers in pink. If there is anything, if you feel not well or you notice something, you can go there. But we both are also here if there is something. But we want to stress that it's the responsibility of all of us that this space is safe and aware. As the last thing, since ENOF is not supported by institution, we are relying on financial support. So there are QR codes if you can donate something. And now we're looking forward to start this event and what our guests have to say, and wish you a good Action Days.
Hello. Can everybody hear me? Welcome, everybody, to our discussion on anti-queer laws in Ghana, Uganda, and Nigeria. And we're going to be exploring resistance and resilience. So I'm Kwaku Adumako. I'm a PhD student at the University of Lausanne. And I study social science and gender studies. And I study the role of... Oh, am I going too fast? Okay, so perfect. So I look at transnational debates and how they on pro and against LGBT issues and how they affect the social political landscape in Ghana. But today I'm moderating, and so in this panel we're going to explore the themes of queer laws and colonialism. We'll cover the past and the present and the future world-making in Ghana, in Uganda, and Nigeria. So, in recent years, various political leaders in numerous states in Africa have taken steps to toughen laws against... Louder? Sure. Is this better? How is this? Okay. But I'm just gonna hold it up like this because I can't quite see with the microphone in my face now. But, so... So basically, over the course of the past few years, there's been a plethora of new laws that have been coming in introduced in various legislatures in Africa, and to make it illegal to identify as or discuss or even show solidarity for people who might be sexual and gender minorities. And so the effects of these legislative developments and the accompanying political homophobia have made the local situation in many of these countries quite untenable for sexual and gender minorities. And we see an increase in violence of people that are just accused of being part of the LGBT community. And so together our experts are going to highlight the historical context in which legislation is being used and also produced against sexual and gender minorities in the countries that they're going to be describing. We're also interested in how norms related to sexual relations and gender expression were transformed by slavery and European colonialism, and to what extent queer struggles are decolonial resistance or can be seen as such. And lastly, we'll explore if and how people outside of these country contexts can show solidarity, and what might be the unintended consequences of solidarity. So I'm just going to introduce our panel. We'll start with Purity. Purity Tumukwasibwe is a trans woman and trans rights activist from Uganda, but living in Sweden. She holds a bachelor's degree in social scientists. Science, majoring in gender and development. She's the co-director of Queerstan Media, a BIPOC trans refugee organization in Sweden. She's also a board member of Transgender Europe and Transamans, Sweden. She also sits on a paid anti-racism panel for the International Lesbian Gay Youth Organization. And lastly, she is the founder of Refugee Trans Initiative Kenya. Welcome, Purity. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
To my left, I have the pleasure of introducing you to Adebayo Quadri Adekunbi, who is an Economic and Social Research Council Sociology PhD candidate at the University of Warwick in Coventry, United Kingdom. His research focuses on intersectional politics of queer activism and feminism in Nigeria, utilizing post-colonial Black queer feminist theory. He analyzes the cultural and sociopolitical dimensions of various subjects, from mainstream pop culture to politics to art to academic debates. Welcome, Adebayo. And last, but certainly not least, we have Awudufi. She's a transgender and intersex researcher, writer, and activist from Ghana. As a researcher, her work explores the history of gender and sexuality and sexually diverse communities in Ghana and Africa. As an activist, she works to advocate for LGBTIQ elders through her project, Queer Elders Speak, a series where she interviews and documents the lived experiences of LGBTIQ elders in Africa. And I've been privy to be reading a little bit of this as she's been writing it. It's actually really good. And I'm really excited for when it's presented. Always be plugging. She coordinates the Rainbow Business Directory, a collective that works to promote LGBTIQ entrepreneurs. Welcome, Awu. All right, so let's hop into this panel. I'm just going to pepper you guys with questions, and y'all can answer any or all of them at once, or something else if you feel inspired. So for each question, let's try to limit our interventions to about 5 minutes, so we have time for questions and answers near the end. All right, so. This first section will deal with the past. What can you tell us about pre-colonial times in your countries when it came to gender and sexual relations? What were the terms used, and how might they be distinct from the Western LGBTQI alphabet soup? What challenges did sexual and gender minorities face prior and during colonialism? And I think we can start with, why don't we start with Purity? To always remind people that people who are on Zoom are just as important as people who are physically here.
Oh, wow. Did you have to begin with me? Well, I'm so glad to be here today. It's so sad that I couldn't come in person. But then it was also good for my health. I have been having less energy emotionally, and so I had to keep at home. But I would love to talk about good things before colonialism in Uganda and how the historical context of how life was before. And I would love to tell you that Uganda was the most queer country. But silently, nobody was talking about it. Life was happening. Everybody was just able to express themselves without having the rigidity that comes with the laws and everything that came with Western world. I can give you, and then our history for the queer movement or the LGBTQ movement in Uganda, probably maybe in Africa, was kind of erased. And it's not documented that much, but what is left is what we actually, some of us, I'm in my 30s, so I could get all the history from my grandparents and my grands, and then also through history. But I can give you an example that our kingdom Buganda Kingdom. The king that came after, before independence, Kabaka Mwanga, is allegedly was a bisexual king. And until to date, in our kingdom, we all call the king our husband. Whether you are, it doesn't matter whether you are cisgender or any, you know, how you describe yourself. So long as it's the king, you call them our husband. But then when colonialists came, then they brought the Bible. And then they told the king that, you know, whatever you are practicing or the way of life is not the best way. So let's introduce the Bible. And then they introduced the Bible. And then they used the Bible against our king. And then they made all the subjects, all the king's subjects to go against him. And then he had to kill everybody who was listening to the white people and then not listening to him as a king, because they were erasing the culture, the way of life. And through erasing everybody, beginning with a king, was the best way to bring the Bible. And until today in Uganda, I will send you materials if you need them. We celebrate Uganda Matters Day, which celebrates the bravery of Christians who refused the kingdom and the way of life. So again, colonialists had to win, and then the king actually was overpowered. Our dress code, I could say, our dress code was gender binary and fluid. It was flamboyant. It was, until to date, when you think about our cultures, how the dress code was in my culture, both men and women and everybody else dressed more flamboyant, with long dresses called kanzus and kitengi. We never had any particular kind of clothes that could lead to, oh, this is for this gender and this is for this gender. And until to date, it is still like that. But because of westernizing and, you know, a colonial dress code of formal, of this is how, putting us in boxes, that kind of dress code is being erased. Before colonialist charity began at home, each family instilled morals which helped the kingdoms in terms of moral decency. So we were all raised by the community. But then back then before us, charity began at home. Every family had an altar and had their own morals and everything in between that brought them who they are and had to live in harmony. Until when that was taken away, and then now it went to a government, it went to the general Western kind of setting where you have systems that change from family to general leadership. Homosexuality was silent, nobody talked about it. And I can give you so many examples of lesbian couples, of gay couples who live together. And I have one couple that my mother, when I was younger, told me that, oh, this couple, this lesbian couple, this woman and this other friend, they chose to stay together and they seemed to love each other, but then they were not related. But, you know, they were friends, they never got married, they were just stayed together. You see, but nobody talked about it. So we don't know exactly what happened. Marriage was fundamental, but nobody was killed for not getting married. But now in Uganda, we have a law that is deemed, the first one that was deemed kill the gays law. So you see, you could not get married and people would think that maybe you're impotent, maybe you're barren, maybe there is a problem, maybe they could solve it. But nobody was so much into killing nobody. Until when colonialists came and opened up eyes, and then they started formalizing that if you have to get married, the Bible says you get married to one woman, you put a ring on it. It became a yardstick of a fulfilled life. But before then, people who aren't married were also living and surviving. But now we are in a world where we have new laws that says that there is death penalty if you are practicing aggregated homosexuality. And that is what is happening in Uganda.
So Purity,
the laws,
I'm just going to have to interject, forgive me, yes. But I just want to make sure that we have enough time for everyone else to intervene. But I will come back to you afterwards, particularly when it comes to, like, you said nobody was speaking about homosexuality, but did they have terms to describe these things? But just hold on to that thought for now. Let me just open the space to our friends in physical space as well. Let's go with Adubayo.
Hi, everyone. Can we hear me? Is this loud enough? Great. All right. First of all, I do want to apologize for the language barrier and not speaking German and French and only being able to communicate with you all in English. However, I am glad as little of colonizers' languages as I can learn, I'll take. thank you all so much for being here. And I have some notes just so I make sure I can like cover everything. But I think when we speak about pre-colonial Africa, I think, you know, there's a lot that was spoken about yesterday about the impacts of colonialism. And I think one thing we need to remember is that it cannot be overstated how much colonialism really has and continues to impact non-Western spaces, and particularly spaces in the Global South. And again, this was something that we spoke about extensively yesterday, and we looked at the influence on, you know, the environment, but also on how we understand and conceptualize war and peace. However, I think one of the major influences for someone like myself in spaces like Nigeria is how it influences gender constructs, how we understand gender, but also how we understand queerness and what queerness means as a result of how we understand gender, right? And a lot of this is not to claim a utopian society as like, oh, pre-colonial Africa was this safe space and everyone was lovely and everyone was great. Like, that's not necessarily what it was, but I think it's also important to understand that, like, we haven't had the privilege of writing that history. So even our understandings of what it means to be in pre-colonial Africa, a lot of that has been either hearsay, guesswork, but also an understanding of our constructs. So looking at our culture, looking at things that have persisted till today. And for me as a Yoruba person, I'm Yoruba, it's a people in Nigeria. And if we look at our language alone, it's enough for us to understand and see how we can conceptualize gender and queerness. So the Yoruba language is a gender-free language in a sense that we have no words for he, we have no words for she, we have no words for son, there's no word for daughter, there's no word for brother, there's no word for sister. So in a conceptualization of a world that doesn't have gender in its language, what does it mean to misgender someone, right? But also, what does it mean to be gay? Because an understanding of homosexuality requires gender as a standard to be measured up against. You need to understand what a man is to understand that a man should not sleep with another man, or a man should. You need to understand what gender is in the first place to understand what transness is. And I think a lot of these things is for us to understand that when we talk about a pre-colonial Africa or a pre-colonial world, this is not a world that accepted queer people. Because I think that is how a lot of us like to frame that conversation. It's, oh, but this was a world that we're accepting of queer people. Queer people were there. You know, there was a queer king. And I think this is something that Purity talks about as well. And it's that the queerness in that space was not an exception. The queerness was the norm. So this wasn't a world that was not queer but accepted queer people. It was a world that accepted queer people because it was queer, right? On a fundamental level, the world was queer. And I think it's important for us to understand that because it really does then influence our definitions and understandings of queerness. Because, you know, in Western space, when we talk about how we understand and define queerness, a lot of it is by Western thinkers. You know, people start to quote Foucault and Judith Butler and, you know, talk about gender performative theory and all of these things. And it's not to say these things don't hold value, but these concepts allow us to see that, like, when we see queerness as something that is anti-normative, right, what does it mean in a space where actually queerness is the norm? What does queerness then as anti-normative actually mean? Right? And I think it's, again, all of these things that is important for us to understand, that there are ways for us to conceptualize queerness and understandings of queerness outside of Western constructions of them. And I think a lot of the implications of the way we see queerness, even, and I think this is something we'll discuss a little bit further ahead as well, is how it then conflates with LGBT, because we now see LGBT as synonymous to queer, However, again, these two things are not always the same. And especially when you understand how the LGBT identity hides a lot of crucial diversities. So it means that when we're then seeing a lot of these pre-colonial African existences, we are only naming the queerness on the terms of, oh, this king had a boyfriend, or this king was sleeping with someone else. But we can actually expand our imaginations even further to understand how much, how queer it actually really is. And it goes beyond just who this person was fucking, pardon my French, who this person was having sex with, or having intercourse, or coitus, who was having coitus with. And yeah, and I think it's and a lot of these things is for us to understand, like, even when we think about queerness and we think about, again, like, trans identities and their understandings of queerness, a lot of that goes beyond sex. A lot of that isn't just about who you're having sex with. A lot of it is a performance. It's queerness as an act, queerness not as an identity. Because a lot of our attachments of queerness to identity frameworks are all relatively recent. These are all colonial frameworks. Even the LGBT identity, this is something that is relatively recent within the Western canon that's then been proliferated globally. And it's important for us to be able to understand and go back to this idea of queerness, not necessarily something that we identify with, but as a practice that is constantly interwoven into our everyday and into things that we do. And I think that in itself is a way for us to understand pre-colonial queerness. That doesn't necessarily erase any violence that could have happened, but also very much validates the complexities of that space, while also sitting with the colonial history that's happened, in the sense that we can't go back to this world already because colonialism has happened. But it's about how can we move forward in ways that still afford us our humanity and dignity, and doesn't necessarily then erase a lot of some of these very vital frameworks that still exist. So it's about us understanding that we, because I think a lot of the conversation tends to frame, like, move around the fact that, oh, these colonial pasts are gone and forgotten and we've lost them. However, they still persist till today. Like I said, the Yoruba language that's completely gender-free is still, like, that still exists. That's still how I talk when I'm speaking to my parents and I'm talking to them. So I could tell you a story about someone and you wouldn't know if I was talking about a man or a woman because it's completely gender free. So again, what does it mean for a trans person who is trying to affirm themselves in a particular identity or a particular framework to be spoken to in a language that actually doesn't see you based on how you physically present and still affords you that humanity and dignity? But yeah.
I can also imagine that sometimes when you come across people that then speak gendered languages, there's a lot of confusion. I've noticed this at least in my family. Sometimes when my parents retired, she, he, whatever, is just stop it. It's enough, you know.
Yeah, it's one of them ones where, like, my dad's trying to, like, talk about someone, and he's like, he, she, or sure, like, it's especially, and you see this a lot with, like, the older generations, yeah, which, like, whose maybe English isn't so well. They're always confusing people's pronouns. Like, they never get the pronouns right. No. And it's not even something that they're doing on purpose. It's just genuinely because they are speaking a language that is entirely gender free. Yeah. So even in these countries like Nigeria, when you have Yoruba people, or it's always one of the weirdest things to me when they are, like, very rude or something to, like, non-binary people, and they're like, oh, why are you using they, them pronouns? I'm like, speak Yoruba. I dare you to misgender someone in Yoruba. I dare you. Because you can literally not do it. Like, you are speaking in gender neutral terms. So why is it hard for you to imagine? And I think that's the problem when we conceptualize queerness on Western frameworks using Judith Butler and Foucault. We think queerness is this abstract theoretical concept that we have to imagine. But no, like, a lot of our understandings of queerness already exist. Like, they actually already are in the world. We don't have to imagine them. Like, a world where, oh, it's gender neutral and the language that we're using isn't gendered and isn't discriminatory. Oh my God, that's, like, unfathomable for the English world. However, speak Yoruba. Like, you'll realize, like, actually, no, speak Igbo. Like, this isn't just a thing to Yoruba people specifically. Like, if you look across a lot of African, a lot of non-Western languages, period, you see that there is room for that flexibility in gender. Either it's completely gender-free, or it has accommodations for other forms of gender and the fluidity in the way gender exists.
So I'm just going to open the floor now to Awo.
I mean, okay, hi. Yeah, okay. There are no pronouns in Ghana as well.